manuscripts in the Irish language are to be found throughout the world in libraries and in private collections, with roughly 5,000 survived manuscripts, the biggest collections located in Ireland, Scotland, England and Wales. These manuscripts range in date from the 11th to the 19th centuries and are made from vellum down to about the middle of the 16th century when paper starts to take over. Paper finally predominates from the early 17th century onward. In the past, the use of surrogates such as facsimiles, photostats and microfilm copies were made. These were not considered even half adequate as surrogates to the original manuscript itself. With the arrival of digitization, the School of Celtic Studies sought to connect its published research to high-quality digital images of the manuscripts themselves. The Irish Script on Screen project was launched in 1999 and was one of the first specialist manuscript digitization projects established in Ireland and is one of the longest running in Europe. We are currently celebrating our 20th year this year. We have advised many similar projects and remain in the forefront in using digital technology for script capture. Usage figures show that 90% of its users are drawn from academic and third level sectors. The ISOS project set out to produce high resolution digital images of Irish manuscripts and to make these available for educational and research purposes on the internet. For the School of Celtic Studies, ISOS represents a natural extension of its statutory responsibilities with regard to research and publication of research in the area of Irish manuscripts. The potential for combining text, either diplomatic or normalized, with images of the sources themselves and linking those images to manuscript catalogues has revolutionized the way in which scholars and all academia now access manuscripts. Ancillary material, chiefly consisting of catalogue descriptions, is displayed with each digitized manuscript. Irish Script on Screen aims to digitize a complete intellectual entity rather than part of it, digitize an entire book rather than a chapter or page, provide free worldwide access to research resources, creating an electronic source of scholarly, educational and cultural interest. ISOS opens up some of the most important Gaelic manuscripts to not just scholars, but the widest possible audience, sharing treasured collections with the world. The ongoing need for primary access to these books by scholars is becoming an increasing concern to librarians, given the fragile nature and physical state of the documents. ISOS, in addition to fulfilling its scholarly and cultural purposes, helps to preserve the manuscript themselves by reducing greatly the need to handle them, therefore helping in their long-term preservation. Thus, scholars today do the bulk of their work from ISOS images online, only consulting the manuscript itself when necessary to examine a binding, for instance, or a particular ink or watermark. The Royal Irish Academy is one of Ireland's largest repositories of Irish manuscripts. ISOS is now used as their first point of primary access for their manuscript collections. ISOS continues to be a very successful project. Its growth has been greatly facilitated by the development of institutional partnership agreements with all the major repositories of Irish manuscripts in Ireland, including the National Library of Ireland, the Royal Irish Academy, Trinity College Dublin, to name a few. It also has developed internationally with the likes of the National Library of Scotland, Chatsworth, the State Library of Victoria, and our latest partners, KU Leuven, at the Royal Library of Belgium. Collaborations to date reach some 24 different institutions here and abroad. There are now 416 manuscripts on ISOS, upwards of 73,503 large resolution images. There have been just over 5 million requests on the ISOS site last year. All images are free of charge, and standard images are on open access. By filling out a registration form, one gains full access, again free of charge, to the specialist high quality images. The project currently has over 1,000 registered users. Here's an example of a digitised image we have of the ISOS, the Yellow Book of Lecan from Trinity College Dublin. This is the first time it has been digitally reproduced. On the left is a sample page which was the only available copy of facsimile. As you can see, it's muddied and illegible in sections. On the right is the low resolution image that is available to all users on the ISOS site, in which you can clearly see all areas. This has opened up a whole new path for research material. Here's just a small sample of how clear the detail is on a high resolution image, which is available to the registered user on the ISOS site. The availability of high quality images of the most important Irish manuscripts had prompted much new and valuable academic research. To give you a few examples, it has given rise to a publication of several books, and this ISOS inspired research has sometimes had interesting and controversial results. For instance, a close study of the script of Lara na Hida, published in 2015, suggests the writing of the scribe, which formerly described as a singular work, has now been overturned to a discovery that no fewer than six different and distinct hands has made this body of work. For another example, recently we've had a colleague of ours, Chantelle Noble, discover a discrepancy in a manuscript in the Royal Irish Academy's collection, MS23N10, which had been incorrectly bound. Up to this point, all research had been conducted on the current arrangement as it stood. With this discovery and with ICIS' ability to digitally reconstruct the correct arrangement, while also leaving the original, new avenues will be opened up to help scholars understand the motivations behind its compilation and how the text should be read. Through ICIS, Irish manuscripts have been given a new platform of discovery. Images from ICIS have been used from exhibitions both nationally and internationally, displayed in heritage centres, visitor centres, and people simply searching their ancestry through genealogies. Artists use images for inspiration and design, and we have supplied images for film, documentaries, etc. Last year, an image of a bagpipe playing pig from the Royal Academy's MSD T2 was used in a commemorated stamp by Ireland's National Postage System on Post. Another interesting use was for this 16th century Irish primer from the Benjamin Ivy Library at Farmley. It extends to 18 pages, written in English and Latin and with some Irish phrases. It sets out the antiquity of the Irish language and race and was prepared on the request of Queen Elizabeth I. The scribe may have been Christopher Nugent, who died while a prisoner of the English government in Dublin Castle. It has been suggested that primer was presented to Elizabeth I on the occasion of her visit to the University of Cambridge in 1564, where Christopher Nugent was a student. It is recorded in the primer that the Queen herself has specifically requested of the author that he provide her with instructions for reading of the Irish language. The main motivations for Elizabeth's request and for the primer's composition was, without doubt, her interest in propagating the Protestant religion among the Irish through the use of the vernacular. A copy of this primer was given to Queen Elizabeth II on her visit to Ireland in May 2011, this being made possible by the Irish Script on Screen digitising work on the original primer, which made images available to produce a lifelike copy. Just to give you a very small taste of what is available on ICIS, here we see the opening page of the Stone Missal from the Royal Irish Academy. This is a decorated manuscript, which is well over 1,000 years old, having been written sometime between 792 and 803 AD. It is a vellum manuscript containing 67 leaves, the first 11 of which comprise extracts from the Gospel of St. John, believed to be written in the monastery of Lorher in Tipperary. The remaining 56 leaves comprise the Missal proper and contain the ordinary canon of the Mass, the order of baptism, of visitation of the sick, and the last rites. In about 1033, a shrine known in Irish as the Cúdach was made for it. The shrine now resides in the National Museum of Ireland. It is a shallow rectangular box made of oak and covered with decorated metal plates. The Stone Missal is small, a mere 15 centimetres high and 11 wide, small enough to be carried around by a priest on his travels. Both the Stone Missal and its shrine were locked away for several hundred years in the walls of Lacking Castle, and in 1735 the owner of the castle, John O'Kennedy, undertook refurbished works and the manuscript and shrine were discovered within the walls. Here you can see the first time it was reunited with the Stone Missal and digitised together on the ICIS project. One of the greatest things we were able to achieve with the ICIS project is allowing access to collections that have been hidden in the past and to try to unite them virtually with related materials at other institutions, making connections that may have previously gone unrecognised. We can compare, for instance, two copies of the Ogham book side by side. As you can see here on the left is the Ogham book in Trinity College Dublin, manuscript 1337, and on the right you have the Royal Irish Academy's Ogham book in the Book of Ballymote. Here you can see the setup we used to digitise the manuscript. This is a non-intrusive capture mechanism which prevents damage to the manuscript. Sensitivity to the fragile nature of the manuscript is paramount to the project. Prior to digitalisation, a manuscript is examined and assessed in order to determine what precautions might be necessary during image capture. After the manuscript is assessed, the cradle is used to fully support the manuscript at all times so that no undue stress is placed on the spine. A large format 5.4 Cynar camera with Phase 1 IQ 180 digital back is used to capture the images. We used a large format camera as the earliest Irish manuscripts were written on vellum or calfskin, a substance that's both strong and durable but subject to a contoured surface. As you're dealing with a live porous substance, it moves under very little heat, So with the 5-4 camera, we have full control on manipulating and focusing on the four corners of the parchment. To keep heat to a minimum, we use Nordlight copy system with cold lights, and temperature and humidity are always constantly monitored and maintained. The key factor in the success of ISOS is, of course, the high quality attained in the image capture itself. Images are digitized at a resolution of at least 600 dpi, with each pixel being 24-bit color. The file size of any given image varies according to the physical size of the manuscript page, but in general, an uncompressed digital image of a manuscript page may result in files in excess of 2 gigabytes. IT has gone through some instrumental changes in ISOS's near 20 years existence. When we first started back in 1999, we were still using floppy disks and Amiga drives to store and transport data. They stored about 2 gigabytes in a chunky removable cartridge, and you needed a special drive with SCSI adapter at each PC. Then we moved on to DLT tapes. They were the next biggest thing in our archival backups, each tape costing €80, with the promise of lasting 30 years. A little under 5 years in, I decided to test that theory. To my shock, about 20% had become unreadable. I was glad we had made 2 copies. So in the end, just be very careful what you do as you go forward, because technology keeps on moving. Images are fundamental information carriers for cultural heritage. All over the world, now more than ever, digitalization is part of the main focus in libraries and museums. We need to be able to integrate with each other, to pass information and allow open source content, so users can use these vast resources collectively. The next avenue for ISOS is adapting to IIIF to achieve some of these goals. This is an open source software platform which aims to bridge this gap in collective integration of resources, where you'll be able to do all of your research in one site while incorporating different content. The development of the Irish Script on Screen project has been one of dedication. The images, along with the provision of relevant information, has resulted in the creation of an electronic resource which is of cultural and educational interest to the casual web browser, as well as scholars of Celtic studies throughout the world, bringing access to a previously unavailable resource, thus creating their availability to this community. I hope that I've given you some insights to the Irish Script on Screen project, and I'll now pass you on to my colleague, Andrea.
I'll just quickly get PowerPoint up. Amongst the things my colleague Anne-Marie has talked to you about is the importance of the resolution and the quality of the pictures uploaded to ISOS. And in the next half of the talk, I'd like to show you a few practical examples of how for a researcher, ISOS has become the most reliable, accessible, and indispensable tool for the study of the old, middle, and early modern Irish languages. I want to show you how, both for research and teaching purposes, making these manuscripts available on a single central website is the most efficient and reliable way to access and study medieval Irish primary sources. So I'll begin by giving you a demonstration. Last week, while preparing this talk, I thought I'd search for pictures of manuscripts that had not been digitized by ISOS and that, in my estimation, had been digitized badly and that were particularly difficult to find and use. While I was doing this, I stumbled across quite a significant discovery, and I'm pretty certain I've identified a scribe of a manuscript that was previously undateable and anonymous. The name of this scribe is Taiguir Iardain, and 3 manuscripts from the late 15th century contain colophons with his name, 2 of which are dated to the 1470s. While I walk you through the process I went through last week, you will see how ISOS plays a pivotal role in it, and I feel this accurately depicts how crucial it is as a tool for researchers in the field of medieval Irish studies. So while looking at a picture of manuscript 598, now in Rennes Bibliothèque Métropole, which was written at least in part in Kilcrae, in modern-day County Cork, the most southwesterly county in Ireland, which was thought to have been written by an anonymous scribe until now. Its illuminated initials reminded me of another manuscript that I'd seen on ISOS, which contains a colophon by a scribe named Taiguir Iardain. When I compared the 2 manuscripts side by side, their similarity was striking, So I decided to investigate further and examine the hand of the scribe. So I'm sure you're all familiar with this process, but in order to do so, I had to download high resolution images of these manuscripts, zoom in on and collect examples of individual letters, observe diagnostic features, and compare the hand of the anonymous Rhein manuscript with that found in all other known manuscripts written by Tai Riordan. So I thought it would be interesting to video myself while doing this, so I could demonstrate to you today how long this took using ISOS and how long it took using the website of Rhein Bibliothèque Métropole. So I set myself a challenge to start with the manuscript reference and using Google, see how long it would take to download an image of folio 3 and copy the third line in the first column onto a page in a Word document. So here we go. I've sped it up. But you can see I did ISOS first. I went there, download the image quickly and into preview and copy and there, and it took 50 seconds. Whereas for the Rhein manuscript, as you'll see, the first Google result was not the page of the manuscript, but the Van Hamel website. So that's Van Hamel's got lots of references for Irish manuscripts. That then referred me to the Rhein website, after which I was confronted with JavaScript issues and a format of showing the images. Now you'll see I get to folio 3 and I zoom in, and then whenever I move the cursor, I move around, and it's very frustrating. Then I'm trying to download it and struggling, and you know, I'd been on the page several times before in past years, but now it's become small, and now I have to reload the same page again. And then I'm looking for, I found the download page now. It's low resolution. That's useless. Okay, I'm looking for more. I'm sure this has all happened to you. It's so frustrating. ISOS just cuts the corners. And so I finally managed, and there we go. Now I had to restart the video, so it's actually 3 minutes and 30 seconds. Which you might say, okay, that's not that bad for a 500-year-old manuscript that's now in France. And not very long ago, I would have to wait weeks, if not months, for an image, and most likely travel to the library myself. But in a world in which it has become as easy to download an image of folio 3 of Royal Irish Academy manuscript 24P1 as it is to download an article from today's Irish Times, we have become used to having immediate access to our manuscripts and with minimal effort. And it is in that world that the digitization project that yields results such as those of the Rhein manuscript just seems obsolete. Next, I started comparing individual letters from the three manuscripts in the hand of Taigo Riordan. So two of these have been digitized, another of which I'd taken pictures with my phone in the Trinity College library, and then the Rhein manuscript. So to do this, I downloaded images of the folios that Taig had colophons on from ISOS, and then began copying and pasting letters into Word documents so I could compare them side by side. So the Rhein manuscript is on the bottom, that's the resolution, and those are the ISOS images then, so there's a massive quality difference there. So what you'll be seeing in the following slides are two columns of details of letters taken from Taigo Riordan manuscript on the far left, then these ones, the second ones are from my phone, the third ones are ISOS, and then the Rhein one are on the right. So that's a G, that's the Turonian et, there'll be some finits and count for ete, so that's a symbol used for going to the next line. Anyway, this will go on. I've got some illuminated initials now to keep your kind of attention. As you can see, while it is evident that the ISOS images are superior quality to the others, even the quality of images taken from my phone are superior to those of the Rhein manuscript. And while the images from the Rhein manuscript are perhaps sufficient to draw some preliminary conclusion as to the identity of the scribe who wrote it, they are unsuitable for any serious study or indeed for publication. So the researcher is forced to collect this data again, after having acquired higher resolution images of the manuscript, or perhaps traveling them. Oh, this is automatically gone. So this is an email. You know that's a frustrating process too. You've all probably corresponded with libraries, and you just want a page of something. And so this is an email I got a few years ago for another manuscript. Dear Andrea, thank you for your mail. We do not provide microfilm copies of our manuscripts. To have a digitized version made, we would have to send the manuscript to the university's photographic unit. So that's $3,500. And then it ends with, I hope this is helpful. So as frightening as an email such as this is to a researcher, for a student, whether undergraduate or postgraduate, this is a decisive barrier. When we consider, therefore, how we can improve the way we teach and study the Codex in the 21st century, I would like to conclude with the following remarks. The best way of learning how to read medieval manuscripts is by spending time reading them, and therefore by having easy access to them. Certainly it's important to teach abbreviations and to teach how medieval books were assembled and bound, and to teach how this changed over time, and I'm not belittling that at all, but for the student of Irish codices, the most useful tool is the manuscript itself. Time and patience. Therefore, the best way to teach the Codex is by making it freely available, ensuring good quality and open source images that can be downloaded in 50 seconds or less. Nobody wants to make the actual historical artifacts that these codices are easy to access, and it is important that red tapes and checks are in place for those who want to handle the manuscripts. But it is important to understand that these checks are entirely unnecessary for the digital images and that they must be removed if we want to improve the way we teach the Codex. The best way of making these images available, I think, is by having a centralized public service website from which the researcher and the student can access manuscripts that are housed in multiple institutions and not having to trawl through the websites of the various institutions in search of images. Or worse again, in the case of manuscripts not being digitized, names of people in special collections departments who you might know, who might give you preferential treatment and sneak you a quick picture of a folio of a manuscript. Indeed, some libraries make us feel like criminals if we try to take pictures of manuscripts that have, for some inexplicable reason, been put in a list of manuscripts that can't be photographed by researchers. So that after having taken a flight, paid for a night's accommodation, gone through all the bureaucracy required to be allowed into a special collections department, you can't even take a picture of the folio you came to read so that you can study it in the future, or go back to it if you feel you've missed something. In fact, often all the evidence we need to prove points in our research is found in a single line or a single letter on one folio of these manuscripts. A solution, you might say, is to order pictures of only the required section of the manuscript, and we can reduce the cost this way. But the nature of what we do, I think, means that we are constantly following leads, falling down rabbit holes, and glancing at what comes after or before our text in the manuscript. How can we allow our curiosity to lead us in our research if we limit ourselves to that one text for which we have paid for pictures, only to wish several months down the line that we had asked for a few more pages of that codex so we could look for another clue that might help us answer whatever questions we have? As studies of the codex move forward into the 21st century, I think it's important to emphasize the transformation that digitization has brought to this discipline, to express our gratitude to those who guarantee the quality and easy accessibility to our codices, and to support digitization projects that prioritize the needs of users over those of the libraries. Because our research benefits tremendously from this quick and seamless access to primary sources, meaning that when we now browse a catalogue of manuscripts, often we can quickly flick through the pages of whatever codex we're researching, find the text we need, transcribe it, and look for the answers to the questions that first made us open that manuscript catalogue. The more time we can spend doing that, and the less we need to spend trying to access the manuscript, and the better we'll understand and able to teach the codex. Thank you very much. Just because there was a few comments earlier about practical ways of teaching the codex, and I think in the Chinese especially, the panel, there was talk of calligraphy and practicing that. Certainly as a student, I was also encouraged to do that. I've just put a few pictures together of manuscripts that I've written, that's a great way of practicing as well and teaching the codex. And you just practice calligraphy, because it's learning to read these manuscripts almost is a skill like learning how to ride a bicycle, and you really need to know how to do it in practice. Well, it helps. It helps a lot, I think. So just that's a final comment on that. Okay, so thank you very much. Yeah.